College football summer is no time to slouch because we are taking you to school on the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. It's time for our annual summer school series as we take time to break down some of your favorite teams with experts and insiders who know these depth charts from top to bottom. But summer school is just extra credit as we go through positional drafts, player rankings, and more. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
Matt was playing well. You know, frankly, we've been struggling at third base a little bit. And so, you know, it's just the combination of the two things. You know, you think you could give Matt another shot. I mean, he's been down roughly a month. You know, put 75 or so plate appearances under his belt and did a nice job with that. And so, you know, time for another chance.
That was Craig Counsell before the game yesterday. Cubs get walked off by the Marlins by a final of 8-7. This is Rahimi and Harris on The Score, and we broadcast live from The Score Sunday Studios. Brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Jed Hoyer was on with Mully and Haw earlier this morning and had a lot to say about not just Matt Shaw, but how to address the needs of the team moving forward. Matt Shaw, as we said before, had a really good showing at the major league level yesterday when you consider that he's eliminated this leg kick, what, two games previously in his minor league career, Marshall? So not for nothing, but that's at least he's showing it at the major league level as well, and it was paying off. The leg kick has turned into a step.
All right, now, how obsessed would you say you are with the leg kick aspect of this? Because that's what we learned is that the whole time he was there, they were trying to get him to change it. He wouldn't change it. Started to hit a little bit without changing it. Then he finally was like, all right, I'll change it. And then they're like, all right, you can come back up now that you changed it.
I think the conditions and the terms of this exchange were very well defined.
I'm glad Matt Shaw is back with the big club. I think Matt Shaw can still have a great rookie season. I think Matt Shaw, as we know, documented, is not the first guy to be up at the majors his first time and have to be sent back down to work on something and then come back and look great. Pete Crow Armstrong, remember when he first came up?
Ian Happ.
When he first came up. There's so many examples of this, specifically with the Cubs, that you have to just be happy that he's back and is in a comfortable enough position to talk about what he changed and why he changed it, and that the Cubs are going to let him bat in that lower third of the order. See, what happened was he was set up for...
What happened was,
opening day, where did that man bat? Where was he in the lineup opening day?
Oh, he was cleanup, wasn't he?
Fifth. He batted fifth.
Yeah, that's, I was like, Bush that's was cleanup, yeah.
I was like, that's too much. Let's let this man settle in.
I just like how they're like, hey, eliminate the leg kick. Nope. Eliminate the leg kick. Nope. Do it. Do it. Eliminates the leg kick. Congratulations, you're back in the major leagues.
I fully expect this man who ended yesterday batting 194 after a 2-4 day to be back over the Mendoza line ASAP and to be making a push towards 250, 260.
Now that I know that there was pretty much one obvious directive, and that I'm going to be looking for that in his at-bats. Even if he goes 0 for today, I'm going to still be pleased because do it. Don't do it. Don't do the leg. Don't do it. I know you want to kick. Don't.
But he'd been doing that in batting practice for days, maybe weeks, down in AAA.
Yeah, he was half,
and then in the game,
half agreeing.
And then in the game, he was like, I'm going to go ahead and kick it up a notch.
It's like mopping half the floor. You got to mop the whole floor. I love it. I love that we can talk about something fun that's enjoyable like this. And the beauty of all of it is that there were results. You know, there were extra base results. There were solid results. That's the fun part of this. But I go back to the discussion we had yesterday. When have you ever heard a commentator say, man, when he added in that leg kick, that's when the power really came?
We
all want to do it.
I don't know that. Because it's fun.
Like, I've been at Sluggers, and I'm like, oh, maybe I should add in this leg kick. Do you know what happened? No contact. Not even close.
Well, it's not for everyone. And that's what Matt Shaw's finding out. It's not for everyone. The leg kick's not for everyone.
It is not. How about we start with addressing that first? Matt Shaw and what Jed Hoyer had to say about him being a solution at third base for this team.
Well, certainly that's why we brought him back up. You know, he was... making good adjustments in Iowa. Obviously, you referenced having the leg kick be a little bit more controlled. And you know, the hope certainly going into the season was that he would be able to handle that job, and that's the hope now. Last year PCA got sent down, almost got sent down multiple times. If you think about his struggles in the first half, and then he played great in the second half. So it's hard to break into the big leagues now. And obviously Matt had his struggles, and you know, the hope is that he starts to get acclimated and figure it out. Because certainly I think our best lineup, would be with him at third base. And as far as like at the deadline, I mean, I certainly, the pitching side is probably more obvious area to add than the position playing side. You know, obviously injuries and things will happen, and that could change. But I think that'd be fairly obvious to look at and say right now, you know, our position playing group has been really good, really consistent. I think our at bats from top to bottom have been excellent. So I think that's really been the strength of our team so far, and hopefully it continues.
He wants this to work out. That's the bottom line. He needs this to work out, because as far as spending capital, as in prospects, on things to help the team, he's hoping third base is not an area in which he has to worry about. Now, it may end up being. They may find a chance where they can bolster that position, even if Matt Shaw is developing at the rate that they want. If this is a true go-for-it-all type season and they're willing to sell the farm, it may be multiple prospects going out for multiple positions. But I would rather the Cubs, in terms of trying to figure out how they can put themselves in best position to win the World Series, figure out the bullpen. That's one. Two, add a star pitcher, a swing and miss king, if you will. Somebody that you can run out there. Jesus Luzardo would have looked good in a Cubs uniform. Look, somebody that you can run out there and fill the position that Justin Steele no longer occupies. And now we know it's going to be a little bit later on Shota Managa even. I think there's other things that need to be addressed well before third base is something they go externally to solve the problem for.
Here's my issue with the Matt Shaw piece of this. Is number one, he's your top prospect. Yes, he should be at the major league level, especially at number two, a position of need that is a huge position of need in the league, as we have discussed. Earlier this week, Bob Nightingale talked about the Cubs' interest in Ryan McMahon of the Rockies. But here's my concern. How many teams are going to be interested in him? It's going to be multiple, and that's a big part of this, too. Nightingale also mentioned the Dodgers in this. I think you can throw that name into anybody who might be a trade target. But even a guy like Nolan Arenado, who just requested to be put down in the lineup because he understands who he is now, I expect is going to get trade interest because other teams are going to see that a change of scenery might be the answer to what they may need at third base. When you consider the market, you have to have Matt Shaw performing in order for the Cubs to help ease some of that concern. And yes, to focus on the other positions of need. So what do we know about Porter Hodge right now? Who is the closer, according to Hoyer?
I think that's probably what happens so often in bullpens. I feel like we had gotten into a pretty good groove, sort of like Palencia and Keller and Hodge and the backs. The two lefties have been throwing really well. And I feel like that formula has been working well for us. And obviously, Porter, went down with an oblique injury. We're hopeful it's not too serious, but certainly we can't play shorthanded, back there. And so now we have to figure that out again. So I think that's just the nature of how it's going to be. We're going to have guys step up. We're going to candidly need some more innings out of our starters. We last night we were asking for 4 1/3 scoreless out of our bullpen, and we almost got there, but not quite. But we're going to need to have these guys get into the sixth, maybe even the seventh, in order to rest these guys a little bit. Otherwise, they get overtaxed. But, I think Brad Keller's been throwing the ball well. Really, Daniel has been almost flawless until last night. So, we've had guys throwing the ball well. We just need more guys to step up, and hopefully Porter's not injured for too long.
So a groove is the closer?
College football summer is no time to slouch because we are taking you to school on the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. It's time for our annual summer school series as we take time to break down some of your favorite teams with experts and insiders who know these depth charts from top to bottom. But summer school is just extra credit as we go through positional drafts, player rankings, and more. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's got to be Palencia. By default, it has to be Palencia. It's got to be the guy who's throwing 100. What are you laughing about, Robbie?
The groove just has a great changeup. Well, it's just an incredible.
But when he says pretty good groove, I was like, were you in a pretty good groove? I don't remember a time in which I could say the Cubs bullpen was in a, quote, pretty good groove, because that's what he just said.
This segment is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. I'm messing with Jed Hoyer a little bit there, and I understand what he's saying.
Are y'all all in agreement on the whole Daniel Palencia has got to be the closer right now? Because there's a strong argument to be made for Brad Keller.
There's a strong argument to be made for Brad Keller, but when do you want him to start the save? Like the seventh?
Okay, no, I think it's just prioritizing who do you want to go 7, 8, 9.
Right, but I'm saying, unfortunately, given how Keller, how he's used and what you know him to do, I think he's still your person who can throw more innings than others.
Oh no, I
think he's a long man still.
No, that's not how I see him at all.
He
was a starter for many years.
But
I'm team Palencia, by the way. He throws gas. Yesterday was a baseball thing. Baseball happens just like he says. My closer.
If you look at that pitch selection, you 100% see why one of those balls was turned on for extra bases. It was only a matter of time.
So let's go back. So he threw 24 pitches, 15 for strikes in that outing. I understand why he was tired. Plus the extra amp of being in the ninth inning in a clear one-run save. Not just a regular save situation, but a one-run save situation.
In a ballpark where, by the way, you look like you have 10 million miles of outfield. Was I the only one thinking that?
It does look like a bigger...
Miami looks like the largest park in the history of America.
But back to my Brad Keller point, you said... I know you used to be... A lot of closers used to be starters. His last seven outings, he's pitched one inning.
But I still think that you can't have him do the ninth when you need him to do so many other things.
No, I don't need that. No, at some point you have to make a decision who's doing the ninth. That's the first question. The answer to that question is, in my opinion, Brad Keller. And then Palencia can be the eighth inning guy or the seventh inning guy. And then where do you want to put Julian Merriweather?
I don't know right now. I was as simple as, does this person throw 100? Ninth. Like that's
I don't think it's that easy. I don't think it's that. I understand why you and Robbie feel the way you do.
Listen to the Jesus Sanchez at bat. Well, number one was a 101 four seam, 101 mile an hour four seam fastball. Number two, 99 mile an hour four seam fastball, also high up in the, or that one was low. So that was, actually, no, the second pitch of that at bat was still high. So he goes super high, still high with a fastball at 99. Third pitch of the at bat, he goes low and outside. Arguably could have been a strike if the buffer zone from last year were intact. Also a four-seamer at 99. Everybody's calling this a slider, but at least the way it was tracked by MLB, 98, heart of the zone, center part of the strike zone, four-seam fastball is how they put it. I don't know who's throwing a slider at 98.
If you're throwing a slider at 98, that means you're throwing 105. That means you're in... That's Chapman area, right? Like prime,
yes,
Chapman?
Yeah.
Prime Chapman.
Andrew Cashner, the former Cubs prospect at one point, I think, could throw a slider at that speed. So that's what you're looking at there. But that is a discussion to me. That's a, hey, don't throw all the same pitch, especially when you go high twice and then the mistake is in the center part of the zone. And I get it. I know Council said he was trying to throw that pitch for a ball. Probably your first mistake, but I get it. You want somebody to swing at a slider in the dirt to entice a swing. But man, I think that's a fixable problem based on that discussion and that piece of it right
okay,
now.
Okay, so who do you want to throw the eighth? If Palencia is your ninth guy, we can work this together.
Oh, terrifying. If I think it might be Thielbar, even though he went 1 1/3 yesterday and was in a different...
Isn't he the only
scenario.
Lefty in the pen, though?
Right now?
Yeah, so...
Then where's Ryan Pressly?
Like maybe Pomeranz. Well, Pomeranz is your eighth inning guy.
Oh, Pomeranz. I'm sorry. Seventh? That's my fault on Pomeranz.
But like Pressly went from the closer coming into the year to now, like what is he?
Maybe he's your seventh or he's your eighth, and then Pomeranz is the combo.
I think they're trying to get to the point where he's back at the back end of the bullpen, Pressly, and that's why that appearance yesterday was so important.
Yeah, and Pomeranz is a lefty too.
Yeah,
Yeah, maybe it's Pressly, PPP, Pressly, Pomeranz, Palencia.
So Keller's not even in the mix.
Keller?
You down with PPP?
Why do you hate Brad Keller?
I don't. I think he's my I need you in whatever scenario I need you in guy. He's my glad I called that guy. Why are you annoyed by this?
I just think right now he's been the best pitcher of late, so let him cook in the back of the game, because you need guys who can actually cook in the back of the game.
But what if I need him to throw three innings?
You know what I've seen a lot of, and this is like yesterday when I got home, and I heated up some leftovers, right? And I try to time it. I put like the glass of water in the back in the microwave. Put the glass of water to because otherwise I don't want my
to steam it.
Yeah, I don't want my food to be super chewy or anything. And I take the power level down and cook it a little bit longer, so the center is like not cold.
That's some skill right there.
I mean, I've been microwaving since I was like 7 or 8 years old. And so the first round didn't work out for me. It was still cold in the middle. It was mac and cheese, and the mac and cheese was still cold in the middle. And I was like, ah, I got to do it again. So I had to do it like two more times. But guess what? It wasn't chewy. It was perfectly good. Like, it tasted like it did when I got it. It was perfect. We're talking about these players, these pitchers in the bullpen, and we don't quite know how to put them in the microwave and use them. Like, get them to where we need them to be.
Yeah, so, that's life in baseball.
It is life in baseball, but I'm saying,
unless you're like the Brewers bullpen that Council had, where you knew exactly who was throwing 7, 8, 9.
The most concerning thing that was said today, and we need to play this sound before we get too close to the break, is talking about the bullpen itself and what they would do as far as pulling the trigger on something externally. And I don't know that I love Jed Hoyer's answer on this.
Listen, I think there's no question that the bullpen is going to be aided by outside help, whether that's big transactions or small. I think there's no question we're going to continue to add guys. And Pomerantz is a example. We added him from Seattle, just like we did with Tyson Miller a year ago. And you just got to keep churning through relievers. I think as far as larger transactions, that doesn't really start probably until, mid to late June at the earliest. It's just the nature of it. And I think when you look around baseball now, there's a lot of teams that are in the, that believe they're in the race, that feel like they have a chance. That's one area that baseball is a little different right now than it has been in other years, where the sellers are less obvious. And so I do think that thinking about big external transactions, that's really call at least a month away, if not more. And so I think we got to focus on smaller transactions, and we got to focus on getting our guys healthy and having our own guys be effective.
You know what they heard? Bullpen is expensive. That's what I heard.
There are, to his point, there are 6 teams out of 30 right now in Major League Baseball who are not within 5 games of a playoff spot. Only 6 teams.
One of those is the Orioles, right? That's where I would start.
Yes, one of those is the Orioles. Another is the White Sox. The other teams that fit into that category are the Washington Nationals, the Pittsburgh Pirates, the Colorado Rockies, and of course, the Miami Marlins.
Womp womp. Do we want to get to this PCA sound before the break? Do we have time? Or at least the leadoff?
Yeah.
Let's hear what Jed Hoyer quickly had to say about who's batting leadoff, because our next guest in the next segment has something to do with that. PCA versus Ian Happ. Go.
I think he can definitely do that job for sure. I think we have a couple really good options. I think Ian did a great job in that spot. He sees so many pitches. He gets on base. I think when you have him and Tucker, hitting 1-2, there's just there's so much traffic on the bases for the other guys. I think it really helps. And then with Pete, Pete's a different style of hitter. It's just he's dangerous right away. The way he's hitting power, and obviously, if he gets on base, he creates havoc. So I think we have two really good options, and unclear how we'll go going forward. My guess is that Ian will start leading off again, and Pete will probably not go quite as far down in the order. But obviously Craig and I will talk about that. But I think that the position has evolved. Honestly, how much criticism we got for trying, Kyle Schwarber in that role. I remember in Boston, we got a lot of criticism for putting Kevin Youkilis in that role, and people thought that was kind of crazy. And I do think that now, Shohei Ohtani, is leading off, and it's not a surprise to anyone that you would put a huge power hitter in. There's a guy that's dangerous at the top of the lineup, and Schwarber's not doing it this year, but he did it in the past with Philly. So certainly I think to myself, if you're a pitcher starting off a game, and you're worried about your first pitch of the game getting hit for a homer, it's unsettling. And so I do think that that's getting your best hitters the most at bats, and also having some fear in the opposing pitcher right away, I think there's real value in that.
That was Jed Hoyer talking about who's going to bat leadoff. And oh, by the way, Kyle Schwarber hitting home run number 300. Do you know how long it went? Did you hear about that?
I'm guessing over 400 feet.
466.
So it was no doubter, is what you're saying?
I can't even compute that distance. You might as well have said 11 billion. It's like that time Giancarlo Stanton hit that 500 one, and I was like, where did it go?
They hit balls very hard, very violently.
It's a lovely thing. But Jed has a point.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.